Once upon a time, in a faraway land, I woke up and realized I am going to be a dentist. Said like no one ever. These are the real stories, not fairy tales, as we go behind the smiles. This is a podcast where we interview and chat with some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation with your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman.
So it is now my great pleasure and honor and privilege to interview my personal dental hero, Dr. Howard Ferran. Now, Dr. Ferran is a man who does not require an introduction. He is a serial entrepreneur. He's the founder of Today's Dental. He's the founder of the Ferran Media. He's an international speaker, an educator, an author, and most importantly, just a really amazing man who's changed the way we practice dentistry today. Thank you for spending some time with us. How are you, Howard?
Well, that introduction was my thoughts regarding you. That's exactly how I would introduce you. I remember when, who's my oral surgeon buddy? Jay Resnick. He's had me come out to California lecture, and both times your entire team was there, and that team was just, I mean, they were enthusiastic, they were passionate. I mean, the way you've been able to attract and retain and keep so many amazing people, and you doing Yappy, I mean, that is amazing. I mean, so we should start the Mutual Admiration Club, and we'll be the only one.
I've been in that club for a long time. I've been a townie. Now, I always say that Dental Town is my hometown. I was raised on Dental Town. I went to school on Dental Town. I made my best friends on Dental Town, and you're the man behind it. So thank you. I know you're very busy, so thank you for taking the time.
No, man. I do this at 3 o'clock in the morning for you. I have so much respect for you. And it's not did you just learn on Dental Town. You shared so much. I mean, there's so many lurkers on Dental Town that are too afraid to ask a question or share their thoughts. And it's the sharers. And, you know, I didn't do anything. I mean, I didn't invent the internet. I just started a little website. I mean, I've never had an original idea in my life. I mean, I became a dentist because my next door neighbor was. I started a website because I was jealous that you could go to ESPN and talk about football, talk about root canals. So, I mean, you know.
Well, I wanted to explain a little bit as far as what we're doing today. So do you want to introduce our project?
So my name is Ian, and Gina and I today are here in our office at Yappy in North Hollywood. And recently we started a new blog series called Behind the Smiles. And what Behind the Smiles is a human interest section on our blog where we have the ability and the opportunity to interview people in the dental community. And we've been writing stories now for a few months. It's been going really well. We've had a lot of fun with it. But we wanted to take a different perspective with you, Dr. Ferran, because you have such a fun and outgoing personality. We really didn't think that writing it could do any justification. So that is why we wanted to do our very first special video podcast we've ever done at Yappy with you. So today we're going to be interviewing you and giving you the opportunity to share your story. And we couldn't be more excited.
Well, I have a face for blogs, not YouTube. You should have.
So, you know what? Let's go back to the beginning. You mentioned that you became a dentist because your next neighbor was. Explain that, please.
You know, I grew up with five sisters and a brother. My mom and dad were Catholic. They had seven kids in a week. They were just dirt poor. Dad delivered rainbow bread for my first decade of my life. I think for $11,000 a year. Mom stayed home. He didn't even have a car. He just used his bread truck. So, I mean, it was just crazy. But he saved up all his money. It's never what you earn. It's what you save. And some people make millions, have no savings. He saved up. And what was going on back then is these bread men were getting out by the new technology at the time, which was franchises, which came up after the government built the freeway system and people were driving all around the country. And he saved up and he bought a Sonic Drive-In. And I think the first year he went from like 11,000 to 60,000. I thought I was the luckiest kid in the world because after school, me and my best friends could walk over to Sonic and eat free cheeseburgers and onion rings and french fries. And he just kept opening up one every year. And by the time I think he had five, we moved to the richest area in Wichita, Kansas at the time, which was Hidden Lakes Estates. And my neighbor was a dentist, Kenny Anderson, who just celebrated his 50th year practicing. He was valedictorian of his class at Creighton University. And I would go to work with my dad and we'd make hamburgers and french fries. And I go to work with Kenny and he'd take these x-rays through a tooth and you could be looking through a tooth and he'd do a root canal and a crown and he'd take an impression. And one of his operatories was a one-man lab back in the day, you know, because it was just full gold crowns or PFMs. And man, I told my dad in the seventh grade, I wanted to be a dentist. And I wrote my dental school, UMKC, in the seventh grade, asking him what I had to do to be a dentist. And Darlene Wing sent me back a letter that said I should go to high school and take science classes. And, you know, it was just, I've always loved it. I thought it was so cool. And it was so disappointing for my dad. I feel sorry for my four boys when people are always saying, well, how come you're not a dentist like your dad? Because when I was little, my dad's friends like Roger Carpenter had 100 Sonics, Jim Williams had 1,000, and all those, their kids were dropping out of high school and starting Sonic franchises. And dad was like, he kept trying to tell me to drop out of high school and get into Sonic. When I told him I'd be a dentist, he said two things. He said, first of all, by the time you got out of school, you could have had 5 Sonics and been a millionaire. Number two, if you're going to go to school for 8 years, why don't you be a real doctor? I'm like, okay, dad, thanks a lot. And, but so you know, I just followed my passion. I mean, I just didn't want to, you know, I don't want to be 55 years old today and say I've made 10,000 cheeseburgers. And if you are a chef, that's so cool. But you know, I just thought fixing teeth was just the neatest thing in the world.
You know, you always talk about your dad being that great influence in your life, and I love that story that you shared in your book, Uncomplicate Business, that when you were 17, your dad sat down with you and he pretty much told you that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who are looking for free fish and those who get a fishing rod. And then he told you that there is no free fish in the Ferran household, right?
Right.
And that influenced your life quite a bit. You went on to pay for your own school. You started your practice from scratch at the age of 24. You had loans, but you didn't get any handout on that. I want to hear more a little bit about that because we have so many new grads coming out of dental school with a huge debt. What advice would you give them?
Well, you know, I think you got to have skin in the game. So when a kid goes to college, if he has no skin in the game, that's the one that's, you know, drinking themselves at the bar every night and they don't care. They're on a fraternity. You always got to have skin in the game. And that's why associates is a very rare breed because the ones that usually have the ambition to do the molar root canal, the ones that have the ambition to do the molar root canal, usually they have skin in the game. They got big student loans. They bought a practice. But when they don't have any student loans because they graduated from dental school and daddy did it and paid for everything and they don't own their own office, they see that molar root canal and they say, you need to go to an endodontist. And then the next person comes in with a wisdom teeth removal. Oh, you need to see an oral surgeon. A kid starts crying. Oh, you need to see a pediatrician. They just sit there and refer everything out. So having skin in the game is huge. And it also makes you think creative. I graduated from dental school, $87,000 in debt 30 years ago, which I think on an interest calculator would be about $200,000 today. But it forced me to start a dental office with no money down. And I used to talk about that, but just the sound of it sounds like you're a charlatan, you're a carnival barker. So I don't even talk about it. But you know what I did? I did my demographics. I was in dental school junior year, and I wrote the Department of Economic Security in Washington, D.C., ask them, well, what's growing? And the reason I knew that was an issue because I had Kenny Anderson, all the dentists on the west side used to have lunch almost every day at the Rose Bowl bowling alley, and they get half a sandwich and a cup of soup or whatever the heck. And those dentists, before computers, they had papers where they would show me the year and their net income, the year and the net income. And they always complain because every year their income was going down because Kansas City would dump out another 120 students. Creighton would dump out, another 50. And they just kept telling me, because the population of Kansas was flat. It was like 280,000 people for decades because every time a girl got pregnant, a guy left town. So the population just stayed. And so I realized supply and demand was an issue because I heard him bitch about this from seventh grade all the way into dental school. They just kept complaining about the oversaturation of dentists. So Department of Economic Security told me that between 85 and 2000, the United States would create 30 million new jobs and half of them would be in 5 cities. It all turned out true. It was Tampa, Boston, Phoenix, Orange County, and Silicon Valley. And I looked at that, and Florida had way too many insects, and Boston was too cold. And seriously, not to be rude, but when you grow up in Kansas, you think everybody in California is some nuthead on drugs. And and I just didn't want to raise a family in California because I really thought it was a, I was brainwashed.
Close.
But it was scary out there. So I picked Phoenix. So then I wrote the Department of Economic Security in Arizona, and they sent me all this data. They sent me the 70, 80, 85 mini census. And I got this 6-foot by 4-foot map, and I traced out the 303 census tracts, and we didn't have computers. It was an index card, and I wrote down the dentist to population ratio, how many homes it was building per month. And I did that for all the whole zip code deal. And I found these, couple of these zip codes. Where I'm at now was my second choice. The number one fastest growing was in North Scottsdale. And I gave that tip to Steve Hayes from UMKC, who went out there and crushed it. But I didn't like the cosmetic scene, because I knew the people who were crushing it in plastic surgery and facelifts and tummy tucks and all that stuff. You know, they always look like Bill Dorfman. You know, they're always hot and they got a six pack and they're all pretty and all that. I didn't think Fred Flintstone me could be a cosmetic guy. You know, I mean, I don't even wear a watch, underwear, or socks. I just couldn't see me hanging out in that place. So I went to Phoenix because that's kind of my people. You know, I mean, middle class. And it was a dentist for every 6,000 people. It was 25,000 population building 90 homes a month. Now it's 30 years later and they got 85,000 people. So I nailed it. And I didn't have any money. So I went to, it was the first computerized data deal. It was like Coldwell Bankers. Remember Coldwell Bankers?
Yeah.
And I went in there in Kansas City and he pulled up on computers and there was this Safeway Plaza. And actually there was two of them. And so I went down there and when I graduated May 11th, I jumped in my car. It took me 2 days to get to Phoenix. I walked in there and I found that the guy that was building both of them. And I said, I want the 2,000 square foot bay in each one of these centers. And he said, great. We want $15 a square foot for 3 years. That's the lease. And I said, no, I want $20 a square foot for 5 years. And he said, oh, okay. So you want me to do the build out? And so I got the bids for the build out. And they were $30,000 each at the time. And he laughed so hard. He said, oh, my God, they're taking advantage of you. I could do that for 10. Because he had the subs to build a 20,000-acre, a 16-acre Safeway Walgreens Plaza. So he did the build out. Then I went to the time that the equipment guy was Healthco. Do you remember Healthco?
Yes.
Yeah, this was before the big rollouts of Patterson and Shine, and Healthco was the big bomb, I think, they're out of Texas. And I picked out all new equipment, just decked it out, and they said, okay, that's $80,000 cash. I said, well, I don't have a dime, so give me a 5-year lease and the last payment I own. And then I went out and got some credit cards, and so I opened my dental office. I opened two the first year with no money down. And, you know, if you had no student loan debt and a dad that would give you money, I wouldn't even have been that innovative. I wouldn't have been, you know, my dad always told me in Kansas, the old saying was, if you see three hungry coyotes walking down a dirt road, something's about to die. And he thought, you know, when you're laying in bed at night and you got a, and you know, the same advice, I opened up my practice on a Thursday, phone didn't ring. No one walked in. I was like, whoa. Next day was Friday. Same thing happened. I just about died. I called dad. Said, Dad, I think I might have really made a bad mistake. He said, Howie, are you scared? I said, I'm really scared. I'm like nauseous. And he goes, good. He said, you know what you need to do, son? Saturday morning, get out there and pretend you're running for mayor. Just get out there, get some business cards, press the flesh. So I got a map of Ahwatukee, and it had 25,000 people. I had this big old map. On Saturdays and Sundays, I walked down every street, knocked on every single door. It took me half a year to knock on every door. They'd open the door. I'd say, hey, my name's Howard Ferran. I'm the new dentist up there in Safeway by 48th and Elliott. And I'm going to practice here from 24 to probably 74. And I just thought I'd get out and meet the people. Two out of three people just thought it was weird. They're like, oh, okay, thank you very much. And they'd shut the door. One out of three would say, really? Well, I got this tooth. And they'd be standing there in their underwear at 9 o'clock in the morning on their porch, pulling back their deal. And I had my little backpack and I had gloves and I had a flashlight and I had a mirror and I'd look at that thing. And then I'd pull out my appointment book. I say, well, you know, you need to come in my office. And they go, well, what do you have open? And I said, I have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week till the end of time, completely open. When would you like to come in? And I wouldn't stop on Saturday and Sunday until the next week, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., hour and a half new patients scheduled. I mean, that's all I did. In fact, at the end of the 6 months when the recall started coming in, I had to hire my first hygienist I hired. It was two of them. And then I was smart. I knew I was 24, didn't know anything. So on the hygiene interview, I knew before they opened their mouth, I was going to interview every one of them and oldest and hire the oldest one. There are all these young hygienists out of school that seemed so fun and all that kind of stuff. And then finally this one lady walked in. I think she was my age. I think she was like 55. And I said, "How long have you been doing this?" She said, 30 years. I said, "I have no idea what I'm doing." And she goes, "Perfect. Perfect. Just I'll do everything." Same thing with the receptionist. You know, I figured if I'm a kid, I don't have any knowledge to train anybody. So I went with the oldest people and that I could find, and the rest was history.
You know, I want to talk about people because you always talk about your assistant, Jen, who's been with you for, I think you always say like 29 years, right?
Yeah.
And when I went to Dental Town headquarters, that was about 7 years ago, I met your office manager, Dawn, who will be celebrating her 30th anniversary with you next year. Is that correct?
Lori will be 20. Dawn will be Dawn just celebrated her 17th.
Oh, 17th. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, and Lori, you know, every time I go to Dental Town, to the townie meeting, I meet the same people. Lori, Ben, Mary Lou, Carrie, Marie, always this, you know, Tom, Hogo. How do you retain these wonderful people? How do you train? How do you, you know, I mean, here's the thing. If you were hit by a bus tomorrow, these people would be able to run your entire business
would be so drunk at the funeral. There'd be so many balloons that, I mean, they would all have thought, you know, I asked my team, you know, lots of people have tried to buy me over the years. And I said, "Well, do you want to work for me or do you want me to sell this company to them, work for them?" And they always say, "We don't want to work for either of you." it's everything. I mean, people always talk about staff training and how do you train staff, and they miss the whole point. The way you train staff is you keep them 10, 20, 30 years. You know, if it's a revolving door, especially in dentistry where you're selling the invisible, where people come in and every time they come in, every 6 months, it's a new assistant, a new hygienist. These DSOs, they all know their number one problem, these DSOs, is their average dentist stays with them a year or two. And it's a problem. It's a problem with millennials, really. And I know the youngest millennials right now, about 22, a lot of people are calling these kids in high school millennials. They're not. Mm-hmm. But even at the greatest companies to work for, FANG, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, their average millennial only stays 1 to 2 years. The shortest burn is actually Amazon. Their average millennial doesn't stay a year. They don't even, the average isn't even a year. And Facebook, which gives you every perk known to man, every stock option, free lunch and sandwiches, everything. Their average millennial stays 2 years because a millennial, you know, like my mom's brother, Pat, got a job at Mobil Oil in the mailroom when he was 16, and he retired from when he was 65. And that's the way it used to be in Honda and Toyota and GM and Chrysler and all that. The millennial, you'll be working at Facebook for 2 years. Some guy will call you from Uber and say, "Hey, you want to work on driverless cars?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm kind of getting bored of my task. I want to go learn something new." Then 2 years later, you know, someone will call them up from Apple or Amazon. So they're loyal to themselves. I think the baby boomers, I mean, look at the difference in Christianity between baby boomers and millennials. You know, Christianity, the Ten Commandments, the first three are obey God, don't call them names, honor the Sabbath. The next one's blind obedience to your parents, honor your mother and father. The millennials are like, you know what? I'm not going to honor my dad if he was an asshole. I'm not going to honor my mom if she's, you know, you have to earn. The millennials are just more spiritual. The religiosity is really the same. They believe there's something greater than themselves, but they don't know if they can't eat shellfish. You know, I mean, they don't get into all the laws and stuff. Well, it's the same thing they have with their dentist and their employer. So when you have blind obedience to God and your parents, you get a job at Mobil Oil at 16 and you stay there till you're 65. Millennials are loyal to themselves. So the baby boomers, you would tell them they need a root canal and they'd say, "Well, you're the doctor." You tell a millennial they need a root canal, and they're like, "Well, let me do a Google search on this." And and they're loyal to their convenience. This place is close to my office. They take my insurance. You know, so it's every generation is more advanced than the one before them. And these millennials are different. So what you got to do is you got to hire slowly. I mean, we will do so many interviews and working interviews. And the thing I tell Dennis, well, you asked a very succinct question. And the succinct answer is this. The Cleveland Browns last year didn't win a game. Not one game. So the question is, well, who the hell leads up your scouting and recruiting? And the guy would say, well, I did. I hired all these people. Okay, well, you suck. You're not good. So I'll go into a dental office where they have rapid turnover for 10, 20, 30 years. And I say, who does all the hiring and firing? And the dentist says, I do. I said, well, you're not good at it. And I thought I was really good at it. But Lori Zalowski for 20 years is far better at it. And then her team, and then she brings them in and all of her department managers will interview this person. And we take that more seriously than anything. In fact, two of the last hires we did, one I think was 35 interviews. I think, and what was horrible about that one, we decided to hire our first interview. So we wasted all that time on 34 people, but it's the same thing with a quarterback. I mean, if you're the New England Patriots and you get a rocking hot quarterback, I mean, you can go to the Super Bowl 8 times and win 5 of them. And if your quarterback is not, so it's everything in the world to hire the right people. And then another thing is a long leash. All animals are control freaks because it's linked directly to their survival. So you're always, everybody's in a controlling mood, and dentists are lawyers, physicians, highly controlling people, and you got to give it up. You got to let loose. You can't micromanage. Nobody wants an employee standing over their back. Like when they ask me questions like, well, you know, Thursday, can I leave at noon? Cause I want to go pick up my mom. It's like, dude, I went to Catholic school. I don't believe you should have to raise your hand and ask permission to go to the bathroom and then get a card and walk down the hall with a, I got a peace sign on my bathroom pass. I said, I'm not Sister Mary Aloisi. You don't need a bathroom pass. You know what your job is. I'm not going to micromanage you. Kind of like the owner of a football game. I'm not going to call in plays, and I'm not going to micromanage your picks. I'm going to give you a very long leash. And maybe at the end of the season, like if your team was the Cleveland Browns, I think as the owner, it's time to step in there and find out what's going on and turn over some people. But it's a human phenomenon. It's the difference between sports and politics. Like, everybody saw Tiger Woods make a hole in one. So you go out there on the golf course, you say, I'm going to do that. And then you hit the ball and it's in the next fairway and you hit someone and you realize I'm not Tiger Woods. Everybody saw the Michael Jordan. There's not a boy in America when they were little that didn't dribble down the deal and jump and try to slam dunk it. And I couldn't even touch the net. And I realized Michael Jordan's mother was probably not a 4'9" fat Irish girl. And then, you know, it's the same with basketball. And all. So you can see, like, math. People always say, you notice people say, well, you know, I'm not good in math. They never admit, well, math is straightforward as possible. So if you're not good in math, I mean, maybe you're not that smart. I mean, have you ever thought of that? You know, it's always, I don't like math. I'm not good in math. Maybe you're just not smart. And, but so then what do? They leave everything they can see and they go to everything where all the experts are. You know, they want to be an art history, an art critic, a movie critic, philosophy, politics. You know, you can rant on politics for 30 minutes because you're too dumb to read macroeconomics and realize that everything you're saying just, I don't care what woulda, shoulda, coulda, it just doesn't work. Here's math, economics. They don't want to talk about economics. They want to talk about politics. Because when you bring in math, then they find out they're not smart. They're not read. They haven't applied themselves. And that's why I think the, and I've written several letters to the SEC, that all these publicly traded companies should chart their employee turnover. I mean, if I'm going into an industry sector, I already know that Southwest Airlines keeps their employees longest. Well, they're also number one. They got 27% of all passenger miles carried. Southwest Airlines, most profitable, fastest growing. I mean, you just can't build great teams. So I asked Dennis, well, what is your employee turnover? They've never even tracked it. And they need to track it. And then if they realize their employee turnover is low compared to other people's that are high, well, maybe you're not good at it. And true, a lot of people probably could be good at math if they decide to get an attitude adjustment and like it. Like you say, well, if they say, I suck on math, you say, well, when's the last time you did a math problem? 20 years ago. Well, you're not going to be good in math if you haven't done a problem for 20 years. So, if you don't like something, then delegate it and give it up and see if someone can do it better. Same thing with treatment plan presentations. We know everybody's close rate in the office. I mean, you don't send in the third or fourth person, which is me, to do it unless you're desperate and running behind or something like that. You want to know who's the best closure. Hygienist, you track when you see eight people a day, how many did you schedule for a 6-month recall? If it's only six, you're losing a quarter of your practice a day. How come this hygienist saw eight, scheduled eight recalls, and scheduled people to do dentistry that was diagnosed, crowns and fillings, and then this other hygienist, only six out of eight rescheduled, and nobody scheduled for any clinical dentistry because she was in there talking about her kid and her vacation and her husband and her child and not doing her job, which is transferring our values to the consumer, because at 64, 10% of Americans have no teeth times two missing half. At 74, 20% of Americans have zero teeth times two missing half. Well, the hygienists aren't going to be wearing a denture at 64. They're not going to be wearing a denture at 74. So why is that? Why do you spend your money? I mean, you're going to spend your money on houses and cars and iPhones. Unless you're really, really poor, then you'll buy some Samsung Droid or whatever and hide it when you go to a bar because no one's going to dance with you if you're carrying a Droid. That's why they have the Apple Watch and they're holding their iPhone out so someone will dance with them. So the bottom line is you got to transfer values. That's an intro camera. That's digital x-rays. That's printing them out. That's showing that here's the cavity. Right now it's a $250 filling. I don't care if you don't have insurance, because when that thing grows into the nerve, it's going to hurt so bad. You'll need $1,000 root canal, $1,000 crown, and then you're still going to say you don't have insurance, but you'll be in so much pain, you'll hand me your Visa card, and then you'll give me $250, and then I'll pull the tooth and keep it. But you give me $250 now, I don't care you don't have insurance. You didn't have insurance to buy your iPhone. That was $1,000. You give me $250 now, we'll fix your tooth, and you'll keep it. So are they transferring values? And then one last thing on retaining staff. Not only do you delegate and not make them feel controlled and give them opportunity. Who was the general in World War II, Patton, he said, I just tell my team the military objective. I'm never going to tell them how to do it, because they come up with the craziest, wildest ideas and they work. And if I told them the details, you just don't do that to your team. Let them figure it out. Tell them what the problem is. Tell them what the problem is and then let them solve it. The other thing is a long leash. Like if you're I got team members that, they just love to get up in the morning, get their kid ready for school and drop them off at school. Well, that means they're not going to get to work till 8:15. If I said you have to be there at 8, now she's got to delegate that to someone else and this and that and everything. I mean, I give them a long leash. I'm like, what makes you happy? So give them a long leash and make them happy. And I think a big reason a lot of my team's been with me forever is because they've actually told me. I mean, they get offers, headhunters trying to get them. They go, I get to do my job. Some people at Dental Town, they're like, well, if I was there at 8, I'd have to leave at 7, be in traffic for an hour. But if I leave at 8:30, everybody's at work, there's no traffic, I can drive to work in half the time, so I'll just work from home on the email. Some of them will tell me, in a cubicle, when you get to work, everybody's walking by and say, hey, Gina, did you see this movie? We went and saw this movie. And you're interrupted so many times. A lot of my team members said, when I work from home and I'm not interrupted, I get twice as much done. It's like, then work from home. I mean, give them a long leash. Some assistants want to work through their lunch because they want to leave right at the end of the day because they got family and other stuff. Some people don't have family. They just have furry friends, and they really like their lunch, and they don't care if they're running late or leave late at the end of the day. So delegate. And then last but not least, humans are crazy, and I don't know what percent are toxic, but it's probably the 80-20 rule always ends up winning at the end. I think 20% of people are toxic. And when people are toxic and people are taking the smile off their face and people have drama, when some people are like really happy one day, then really moody the other day, moody people, huge red flag. You look at the one thing in common that all my employees have is whenever you meet them, you're talking to the same person. But there are other people where sometimes they're all lovey and huggy and fun. Then other times they got crazy eyes and they're all mad and they're upset. And I can tell you I love you 10 times. But then when I tell you you're a fat, stupid idiot, that hurts so bad that the next 10 I love you doesn't cover it up. And when you call a woman fat, you know why she'll never forget?
Tell me.
Because elephants have a long memory. You know that, Ryan? So the bottom line is you got to step in on toxic employees. Don't let a toxic employee ruin your team. And you know who's causing all the drama. You know who's setting up all the craziness. And you know what's going on. But since you're a social animal, you know that if this tribe of gorillas or chimpanzees or sapiens or bonobos, or if they kick you out, your survival goes to zero and you're going to get eaten by hyenas. You need to work together in the team. So your natural 2 million years of programming says we all got to work together or we're all going to die. Well, you know, I haven't been chased by a wildebeest my entire life. I've never been cornered by hyenas, lions, or tigers. And so your frontal cortex has to understand your natural programming, and you don't need everyone on the team. And when you got toxicity, you need to stamp it out. And sometimes it's a cancer. I mean, I've owned my business for 30 years. Sometimes out of nowhere, it's not even one. It's like two people. They've just decided that they're just, you know, going to have a bad attitude and throw everyone under a bus and start making life drama. And then Dennis will think, well, my God, she's been my assistant for 9 years. Well, I don't care. This isn't 9 years ago. This is today. Mm-hmm. And she's taught, maybe something changed her life. Maybe, you know, she's going through a divorce. Maybe her dog died. You know, you don't know what people are going through. I tell my team, look, there's 168 hours in a week. I own your ass for 40. If you want to be crazy, drunk, and toxic, do it with your friends and family, the other 124. But when you're in here, we're all going to have fun. We're all going to treat each other like we want to be treated. We're going to all play in the sandbox. We're going to share our toys. We're all going to get along. And if you decide you don't want to get along, I will personally fire your ass right now.
Excellent advice. So what I heard is hire slowly and terminate quickly. But let me ask you a question. Dentists always say that they want to motivate people, motivate their employees. Can you motivate? Is there such a thing, or are people self-motivating?
I think people are internally born leaders. I think they're internally born readers. I think they're internally motivated. I think what the management's not like, can I motivate you? It's, can I make sure your environment isn't toxic so you get unmotivated because nothing ever changes? Why does he put up with her? Oh, she's his favorite. So she's going to walk all over everybody and be dysfunctional and crazy and toxic because they've known each other for 5, 10, 20 years. I have to admit, growing up with 5 sisters, every time, and a brother, and I have the world's most perfect brother. I got amazing sisters. And after about 5 years, your team members kind of become your brother and sister. I mean, I really care for these people, but you know what? You can't have a friend as a boss or a coach, because if I'm really your friend and you're an NBA basketball player and you show up for practice and I say, first, we're going to run bleachers for an hour. And you tell me, you know what? I got a headache. I didn't sleep good last night. I don't feel very good. You care if I just go lay down? Well, if I'm your friend, I'd say, of course, but you don't need a friend. You're not going to get a gold medal with a friend. You're not going to have a great business with a friend. And Abraham Maslow, who I think was the greatest sociologist, anthropologist of all time, him and who's the guy who wrote the Naked Ape, Desmond Morris. I love those guys, but he said, I can't be your friend and your boss, because you're not going to fire your friend who's in monthly subscription debt services with rent, mortgage, and all these credit card payments. I'm not your friend, because I will fire you. And your life will be turned upside down maybe for a while. And so it's respect. It's fun. Like, I don't like to go to lunch with one person. I think that's weird. I'd rather go to lunch with your team. I'd rather bring lunch in and have it at the office. You know, I want to be non-toxic. I want to be fun. I want to be respectful. I don't want to be controlling. I want to give you a long leash. And you can call me Howard, dumbass, fat ass. You can call me anything you want. It's all good. But if you cross the line, and we play baseball usually, it's 3 strikes and you're out. And, you know, and you always sit there and say, you know, I want you to write it up, because I know what I'm saying. I don't know what you're hearing. Write me up. Write yourself up why I'm feeling this way. Because you can argue facts, but you can't argue feelings. You put into your own words, and then you sign it, and then I'll sign if I agree. And so many times when they write it up, you realize, okay, we're not even on the same page. So they write it up once. And sign it. I sign it. They write up again. They sign. I sign it. third time, there's no writing up. I mean, if it's someone that's always coming in 15 minutes late, it's like, look, dude, I've lectured 1,000 times. Those flight attendants, they're usually gone for 4 days, and half of them have kids at home. So she can go to work and be gone for 4 days, but you can't get to work on time, or you can't, or whatever it is. The third time that they're going to do it, they just, you know, they just smile. They come in, they give me a hug. I know. I know. I hit the snooze alarm. And when I hit the snooze alarm, I knew this is all going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the difference in a B2B magazine versus a B2C website. I mean, you know, you can come in whenever you want on a magazine, but when you have patients in the chair, we can't be waiting for you for 15 minutes because you decide to hit the snooze alarm three times or blame it on your kid.
Very true. So here's what I'm hearing. In order to be successful in business, and you know what, you come from such humble beginnings, you know, growing up in Wichita, Kansas, and, you know, watching your dad work and, you know, becoming so successful, you obviously have some secrets to success, which we want to learn from you. So I'm hearing demographics. I'm hearing hard work. I'm hearing low debt, save your money, and choose the right people and retain the right people. What else is there?
Well, I want to go back to that humble thing because I love quizzing the person sitting next to me on the airplane. I mean, you know, they pull out a book or they pull out their laptop and they're all prepared to read for 3 hours and get a bunch of work done. They don't know by, they just sat by the unluckiest person in the world who's just, and all of a sudden they say, you know, describe a physician, a dentist, a lawyer. How would you describe it? If you pick one word, you know, it's never humble. It's always arrogant, know-it-all, condescending. By the way, Ian, condescending means when you're talking down to someone. But back to that humility, you know, you got to listen to your staff. You got to listen to your customers. You got to listen to advice. And dentists, physicians, and lawyers, attorneys, esquires, they always know everything. Well, you know what you know. So shut up. If I meet with you two, I want to know what you know. I want to go to lunch with you and just download your whole brain and sit there and listen. And it's a humble person says, well, yeah, I assume everything I do could be done faster, easier, higher quality at a lower cost. And the other thing back to another secret is, you know, my dad always told me he was a very religious man. He went to mass every single day. My two oldest sisters, straight out of high school, went to the nunnery. My mom always told me that I was so smart I could be the first American pope. So I decided to save the church by not going. But anyway, Dad always said, you know, keep one eye on your customer and one eye on cost. And you're supposed to use your God-given talent, your brain, to figure out how to drive down your costs so your customer has the freedom to afford your paint, your whatever you're selling. And so many dentists, I mean, you know, they take a $17 Emperor gum impression, send it to their lab man who makes them a $99 PFM or zirconium crown, but they start thinking. And they take that eye off cost. Next thing you know, they got a $150,000 chairside milling machine, a $15,000 true definition scanner that has a $200 a month licensing agreement. So now you're paying $2,400 just for the software. Shit, you weren't paying $2,400 a year for Emperor gum. Mm-hmm. Now you're paying $2,400 for a licensing agreement to use your $14,000 true def scanner. And now you can't send this to your labman across the street because he's not set up for all this stuff. So it seems like every time, you know, a 15 blade. I saw this, you know, 30 years ago. You could take a 15 blade, lay a flap, do a perio surgery, figure out, and then these people come out and say, oh, throw that $1 scalpel away. We got a $50,000 carbon dioxide laser that can do it. Well, why would you do a $50,000 solution if I got a dollar solution? I mean, it's like even the Schick shavers. I mean, they've been in a nuclear arms race with themselves, adding more blades for the last 20 years. Now they're up to like 5 blades. And then Dollar Shaver came along and says, you know what? All the professional barbers only use one blade. When's the last time you just shaved with a single blade? Well, this damn thing's a dollar. And then you go buy it and you shave it and you say, wow, I shaved. Yeah, I'm not looking forward. I don't want to live to be 100 just so I can buy a Gillette shaver that has 49 blades. I mean, you know, so keep your eye on costs, you know, drive down costs. So on your team, or in your marriage, if you're married to someone who has a spending problem and they always want to solve it by going and trying to get a raise or try to quit their job and get another job that has more money, that's a problem. And when they came out with a book a couple of years ago, all done on demographics, it was two PhD doctors. It was called The Millionaire Next Door. The number one occupation for being a millionaire was a school teacher. And these people don't make money. So they're like, well, I'm a school teacher. I'm not going to buy a Lexus. I'm going to buy a used Ford Taurus. I'm not going to buy a mansion. I'm going to buy a little house. When I go on vacation, I'm going to camp at the lake. I'm not going to fly to Hawaii. And I look at Dennis, and sometimes I'll be talking, I'll say, you know, instead of camping out, you fly to Hawaii. Instead of buying a watch, I mean, why do you need a watch if you have an iPhone? I mean, it has a time on there. Why do you have another watch? Why did it have to be Rolex? Why do you have to drive a Range Rover? I say, just show me one area in your personal professional life where you spend less than you earn. I mean, not even clothing. Like, they'll be wearing like some $200 pair of shoes or something, and I'm wearing Asics. You know what I mean? I mean, why? So if every time you have an idea, and why does that happen? Same thing with Congress. Because when you spend money, you secrete dopamine and serotonin. And these PhDs, you know, most of your Nobel Prize winners came from the, in economics all came from the University of Chicago. I mean, the greatest minds. They've been telling you that for 30 years. When I'm a congressman, if I go to Congress and all I do is veto all these spending bills, well, I'm not going to feel very good. I'm going to get a bunch of hate mail. But if I come out and pass some $100 billion plan to do something, I feel omnipotent. I'm important. I feel good. Look what I did. I just spent $100 billion. I just bought a chairside milling. I just bought a laser. I just spent a shitload of money. And now you're going to have to pay for it with interest. So a minimalistic lifestyle. You know, you don't need a boat. Are you telling me you can't find some dumbass friend of yours with a boat that if you just show up with a case of beer, you can spend the day on the boat? I don't need a cabin. I got 20 friends that have cabins up north. Let them buy the damn cabin. I'll just show up with a bottle of whiskey, a case of beer, and some hamburger meat, and there's my cabin expense. I mean, you just quit spending money. People will buy a jet ski and a boat, and they only go in the summer three times. Dude, you can rent a boat and a jet ski. You know, you don't even have to do the maintenance. Just if every person would spend less money. It's like your wife wants to stay home and raise the kids. Great. But why does she need a separate car? Why does she need to have all this fancy stuff? Why does she, you know, most, you go into any millennial's home. If you want to hide something from a millennial, you just put it in the stove. They'll never look there for 100 years. Why do you always have to eat out? Why do you always have to have delivery? You know, just if you just quit spending, your stress will go down and down and down. And, you know, so dentists, physicians, lawyers, congressmen, senators, they just have a huge spending problem.
Very true. You know, you and I think a lot of what you say goes back to the way you were raised, and you always comment on the wonderful advice that you received from your parents. And you have four boys, Eric, Greg, Zach, and Ryan, and they're all grown up right now. But, you know, my kids are younger. What advice did you give your kids when they were growing up?
Well, I thought our generation was so much better because you know, back then after World War II, the average mom was having 5.5 kids and she started having them at 16. I mean, my mom had 7 kids before she was 18. And so they couldn't be a helicopter parent. So the kids were all running wild. And so that's back to your work. You know, you're not controlling people. I mean, my family, I mean, God, I could come home after school, decide I'm going to go to David Borland's house or one of my friend's house, David Hornbrick or Mark Borland, and hell, just spend the night. And maybe that mom would have made a phone call. Your son is over here eating dinner and he says he's going to spend that. They just didn't care. But with the advent of birth control, you know, everything has a trade-off. So what happened with birth control? You start having your first kid 10 years instead of 16. Now you're 27. And instead of having 7 kids, you have 2. And so you're controlling, you're a helicopter, you're hovering over them, and your kid doesn't get to figure out what it's like to get punched in the nose of the schoolyard or to fall down or to not make the team and to fail. And now everybody's getting a participation trophy and no one, and they want to keep you from failing. You know, let your team fail. When my team comes to me and says, we did this And we thought it was a great idea, and we spent $11,000, and it was a really bad idea. I'm like, great. Because if you come to an intersection, you're lost, and you make a left-hand turn, and one block down, it's a dead end. Well, we've ruled out a left turn. So come back to the intersection, and now you're down to straight or turn right. So, you know, if you don't have employee turnover, you know, you have to set up a team where you treat winning and losing the same. If your kid wins and he's jumping up and down and screaming and freaking out, well, what's he going to do when he loses? You know, cry, bawl, and quit? I mean, winning is losing. We're all going to die. No one gets off this rock. You know, I think 13 people stood on the moon and every one of them came back to Earth and died. No one gets off this rock alive. We all retire to the same size condo, 6 feet under the ground. So be happy, be healthy. And probably what I'm the most proud of professionally, personally, it's obviously my kids and my grandkids. I mean, I got three amazing boys. Oh, well, Ryan's sitting next to me, so I'll see four. And three good ones and Ryan. And but the bottom line is professionally, what I am most proud of is I never worked a day in my life. I mean, I didn't want to stay home with my five sisters and play Barbie dolls. I wanted to go to Sonic where my dad was there and eat free cheeseburgers and those gorgeous car hops on rollerblades. And I thought that was so fun. And then I go to work with Kenny and I thought that was so fun. And when I became a dentist, I mean, I got my FAGD, my MAGD, my fellowship, the mission suit, my diplomat in the international because I just thought, going to all these courses and learning all these recipes. And I mean, I just wanted to be able, I saw my dental office as like an emergency room. So if someone came in and they're in pain, they're holding their face. It's like, I was so excited. I can fix that. You know, that's what I do. And if you're scared, I love that too. I mean, I would rather try to get you calmed down and relaxed and everything than just have some anesthesiologist. I'll just come in and put you to sleep on Profanol because putting you down to sleep didn't treat your anxiety, but talking it out and getting you relaxed and leaning you back and knowing that you're in control. You can raise your hand, maybe a little laughing gas. That's like, you know, maybe a glass of wine or something. And that's treating anxiety. We're just knocking them out doesn't treat it. So I just loved it. So that's why I tell dentists the only reason to buy a chairside milling or a laser or Lenap or any of that stuff is if you just think it's really, really cool. If that makes you run 20 red lights on the way to work, you can't afford not to buy it because burnout, disease, depression. I mean, 14% of Americans are alcoholics. And that's why I'm proud of my Irish roots, because in Ireland, 38%. And that's why I hate Russians. I really do, because they're the only country that beats the Irish. They're 40% alcoholics. I want the Russians to quit drinking so the Irish can be number one. And so that's the same thing. Don't ever pay people money you don't want to see. When I go to the office, I have to get there early because I'm so excited to see Yoni. And I'm so excited to see Don. I mean, I love Chris Galore's been my assistant 15 years. Yoni's been there 12. Don is up front 17 years. I mean, I love to see them. I want to, you know, so don't pay money to someone that when you see them, you take a right turn and go into your office and shut the door. Don't pay people money that you don't want to hang out with because it's not fun. And then you'll secrete adrenaline and noradrenaline. Then people are saying, why are you cranky? What's going on? What's going on? This other monkey's making me cranky. And there might not be anything wrong with her. When you go into these teams, they have cultures. Some cultures, they all love country music and bowling. Some cultures, they're all cooking and camping. But they have cultures. And you want a team where everybody just has an involuntary smile or a laugh when they see you. And that's how you keep team members for life, making it fun.
Absolutely. Oh, I love your message. It doesn't feel like work when you say, I get to do this. One thing I love about Dental Town is this is a place where we can talk about this because so many dentists are really not enjoying where they are personally or professionally. So many dentists still years away from retirement talk about dentistry as in something that, you know, they just have to do this for another 10, 15 years before they can hang up the handpiece. And it makes all the difference in the world when you can find something that you enjoy and talk about it as in, I get to do this every day. And Dental Town is a great place to find your passion, to find your joy. we only have a couple of minutes left, but I want you to talk about Dental Town, how it came about, we're up to what, 240,000 members now?
Yeah.
Over 5 million posts.
Right. So we started it, since I'm Irish, we started it on St. Patrick's Day in 1999. And Facebook didn't start till 2004. We were 5 years before Facebook. And I think what we did that was so different is, the internet was invented by the military because the White House was afraid that if an incoming Russian nuclear bomb blew up in the Midwest, they couldn't communicate with Cheyenne Mountain to launch a return. So they came up with this internet thing. Well, in order to figure that out, they invented a computerized bulletin board service, which is what we use, a message board forum. You know, the first social media about 94 was all these email groups like dentists at CompuServe, dentists at Yahoo. There was Internet Dental Forum with Dave Dodell here in Phoenix. There was Generation Next. There was Root ZX. But what was weird about that is you'd open up your email and you'd have 18 million emails. They're unorganized. And then all social media did is take apps to take that out of your email group. And then came Friendster and MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram. It's still just this unorganized newsfeed, which is awesome. I love it. I'm members of all those things too. I love your cat pictures. I love your jokes. I love all the stuff like that. But on a message board forum, it's organized. It's root canals, fillings, crowns. So if you're an endodontist, you just want to go to endo. And then if you search a question, it's already been asked 20 times. So then you read that stored FAQ. And most of these threads keep getting views and views and views, but no post because you basically talked about that intersection. You turn left, you turn right, you went forward. There's nothing more to ask. And so that storage system. And the other thing that I like about the computerized message board system as opposed to social media like Facebook is on Facebook, if I tell you something you don't want to hear, you delete me. So you're getting more balkanized. And they have data on this. Like Democrats, Twitter did a great study on this, where all the Democrats are all following each other. And all the Republicans are all following each other. So there's no cross-fertilization. I mean, there's cosmetic dentists who seriously believe that posterior composites last longer than amalgams. I mean, dude, you're wrong. I mean, and we can post 100 studies showing how wrong you are. I mean, a silver filling, it's half mercury. You'll never find mercury in a multivitamin. The other half is silver. That's antibacterial silver diamine fluoride in pediatric dentistry. Tin, that's stannous fluoride with hygiene. I mean, every ingredient is antibacterial. And you think this inert plastic crap lasts longer than that? So what I like, and the other thing about message board forum is we verify everyone. When you sign up for Dental Town, we know who you are. And we ding your email every month. And as soon as your email starts working, you can't post anymore. And so we know who you are, but you don't want to go. You know, I loved my favorite post of yours of all time was showing a clinical case that went south just recently. Remember that? Yeah. And you showed that, hey, Gina, who everyone assumes is a god who walks on water.
Not
actually,
invincible.
Actually, Gina doesn't have a swim pool because when she dives in, she just hits the top of the water and stays there. She can't go underwater. But you showed a failed case. Well, most people don't have the self-esteem that you do to say, hey, here's what Rukin I did. I perfed it. What would you do? So they like anonymous. And I know anonymity is the number one complaint on Dental Town. But, you know, I had a long talk with in the early days with Rella Christian about this. And Rella said, you know, Howard, the best thing you could do for the community of dentistry is have a place where you can ask a stupid question. And if the only way you can ask a stupid question is to be Smiley Tooth Doc instead of Gina, and here's my name and address and phone number, so that's what dentistry needs. And I like that anonymity and I like the organization. And also the average dentist has 29 apps on their iPhone. So it's not like it's either Dental Town or Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. They're all slightly different. Like on LinkedIn, those are all the dental manufacturing people. And that's fun to talk to them. Yeah. And you know, when we started Dental Town, all these, the number one complaint for the first 2 years, hey, this guy got on there and he's a salesman. He works for Henry Schein and he's trying to sell stuff. And I'm like, well, what the hell are you? A volunteer dentist and some Peace Corps thing? What are you? do you sell stuff? Oh, you can sell a crown for $1,000. See, judgment is a confession of character. You're against this guy because he's selling. Maybe you're looking in the mirror and maybe you're overselling yourself and why you have this feeling. But I knew that if all the dentists got on the boards and they said, Gina, love your product, but it's red. I just really wish it was blue. Well, you got to know that more than anyone because you're the only one that can change it. So I called it Dental Town, and it's at least 10% manufacturers. And so many manufacturers have told me, you know, we used to do Survey Monkeys. We used to have bring in 10 dentists, ask them. Now we just go to Dental Town. We search our product. We see what all of our customers are saying about it, good or bad. And that's what our R&D team looks at, is what you guys are all saying about the product. And OrthoTown does not still not allow anybody than an orthodontist. Come on, I can't even go on OrthoTown. I own the damn site. It's orthodontist only. And you know, there, you know, Henry Schein Ortho and all these ortho companies, they really like Invisalign. The CEO of Invisalign should see what all the orthodontists think of their Smiles Direct plan and all these things like that. So I call it transparency.
You know what? I had exactly the same experience. And actually the day that my life has changed for the better, or completely, you know, completely changed, is the day when my dad called and said, what does O stand in the MOD? And I'm like, Dad, that's a weird question. Why do you want to know? And he's like, just tell me. He calls me 30 minutes later. He's like, you have to check it out. That was, I want to say early 2002. And I've been on Dental Town for now, 16 years. And I've learned so much. I've learned how to practice dentistry. I've learned how to run a practice. You know, I went to dental school. I don't have an MBA. My first MBA was a 30-day MBA, which a friend of mine sent me. Steve Polaway, also a townie, sent me like a collection of VHS tapes. That's what I learned about business. And then on Dental Town, you know, asking questions, embarrassing questions, good questions. And then one day when we had an idea for a product, I called you and I said, Howard, can we talk about this? He's like, he was like, come over. And I thought I had an hour. You gave me 4 hours. That was the most incredible gift you've given me. And then we just, so we came up with Yappy. And one day Mike Melkers posted Yappy EP Me So Happy. And now we have thousands of customers. We're in, you know, several countries. And it's just, it wouldn't have happened if it weren't for Dental Town and for all of the feedback that we receive from our customers, potential customers, everything that, you know, every single feature that we have came from the ideas that people shared with me on Dental Town. So I thank you so much for your time. Thank you for everything you've done for me personally, for us, for our profession. You are my absolute hero, and I can't believe I got to interview you. That is the biggest honor.
Oh, the honor was all mine, Gina. I think the world of you. You're a very special person. You got a very special husband and father and staff and team. You're just you can feel your energy and karma when you walk in the room. And I mean, it just it's been an honor and privilege to be your friend.
Thank you.